Live from the Ghost Hunter Store. Brought to you by the Shadowlands, South Jersey Ghost Research, and the Ghost Hunter Store. Here's some paranormal straight talk with your hosts, Dave Giuliano and Marty Haynes.
Buddy, how you doing? We got Dave on Skype. I'm live in the store. We have our guests tonight are Kim and Bill from South Jersey Ghost Research.
How you doing?
Hello.
Hi, hopefully you can hear me.
We can hear you.
Alright. It's interesting that it's going to sound like it's like a tin can kind of thing. Sounds like you guys are on the other end of the string. So if anyone out in the chat room, if you get, just let us know if you can't hear, just let us know, we can adjust the sound a little bit. First time we're trying it from two different locations.
Yeah, so we're prepared to do it when we go, when you go up to Gettysburg, huh?
Yeah, so the practice run, hopefully, I haven't asked Dave if he's going yet, but he's in the chat room. So Dave, if you're going to Gettysburg, maybe we can set up, do our shows from, Phenomenology, since I'm going to be up there. That'd be an interesting location to do it from if we can get enough Wi-Fi that's going to hold the connection. Any suggestions on what we should talk about tonight? Because I have one idea that we can go down the road of something that was popping in my head while I was sitting here.
Well, let's run with yours first, and then we'll see what comes up next.
All right. My question is, what is a demonologist?
Wow, is there...
An ologist who studies demons?
Well, that's the definition of it, you know. A person who studies demons would be a demonologist, but, you know, what do you consider a true demonologist if nobody really is an expert in this?
Exactly. That's a very good point.
I guess
there's a lot of people that go around, and let me put it straight out there from the very beginning, saying I'm not knocking anybody who uses the title. My question, because I don't know everyone's qualifications, there are some people who have been trained, there are some people that can use that title, but a lot of people, I've worked with some of them in the past, have slapped that title onto themselves, and, you know, by definition, it's a person who studies demons, so, I mean, we can all, you know, get a book on demons, study it, and call ourselves a demonologist. But you find more people that actually do deal with the work and the art and the darker stuff actually don't choose not to use that title. Yet other people do, and it's hard to tell. Like, if you're looking for help for that, who do you go to? How do you know? You know, who's legit, who's not? So, I mean, that's always been something we've toiled with too. Like, how do we mention? I mean, we've never really mentioned as a group, you know, South Jersey Ghost Research, that we even deal with anything demonic or dark. Yet we get, you know, 50% of our cases or more like that. And yet we mentioned nothing like that at all. What if we slapped on our this title of demonologist? What would it go up to then? Because some people seek that out.
We'd be at 100%. Yeah. We would be.
And how many more would that attract the people who aren't necessarily really in need of our help? They're more, in need of maybe some sort of mental help. Then you get more of the people that are on the fringe that aren't really experiencing spirits, but because of that whole genre of TV movies and everything else with the demonology kind of take on it, that does attract people to it. We'd probably get a hell of a lot more applications, too.
Oh, sure. I'm sure there would be a lot more people that wanted to go do those cases. Just because, they want to see if it's like the movies.
And I know Kim knows a lot of people out in the field there. I don't know if she knows anybody else that walks around or advertises themselves as demonologists. I know that I'm not a big I don't know, watch a lot of the ghost shows, but I know there was a cat had their own person on that was a demonologist, one of the twins, right?
Yeah.
I don't know anything about him. Him might know more.
He had a religious background. He had some religious training, I believe.
That's from what I understand. I think the whole flip side of the conversation, though, is what is the expectations of the person calling in? Why would they call a demonologist? Why would they call somebody who deals with negative cases? Why would they call somebody who just does paranormal investigation? You know, what are their expectations here?
I think you're right. I think that plays a lot into it. The people calling, also, they're looking for that specialist. Or, you know, do they turn to the demonologist first or the clergy? And that's why, I mean, obviously if your clergy has gone through some kind of training, you've gone through some sort of education process, and it varies through your religion, you know, and how long, but at least you've gotten something, some kind of training. I am aware of a lot of what they consider like lay demonologists that have been trained by members of the church to do up to a certain amount of things, like even certain exorcisms, like an exorcism of an object or a place, but not of a person. But, they're not exactly carrying a card around saying, hi, this is my ID, this is my qualification. So, yeah, how do you identify the people who are real and who aren't? It becomes like a very sticky situation in a very, nasty and, topic that can really cause people some harm. I mean, it's different with, we already are aware of how many groups out there that are more fly-by-night, ghost researchers, or are scientific-only ghost researchers, where they're looking for evidence, not necessarily looking for, assisting people like we do.
Yeah, way to help.
But when you get into this thing where when people are specifically contacting people who are claiming to be demonologists and claiming to be able to work with that kind of thing and they don't have that kind of knowledge, this goes beyond blowing up in your face and having people, just scared to be in their house. This, becomes physically dangerous.
So what do you tell people to look for when they're looking for something like, somebody who, a client that needs that kind of help? What are they looking for in a group?
I have an article up on the Shadowlands that's almost like that on the local groups page.
Right.
It kind of gives people like different things of what you should, don't be afraid to ask. Like, don't be afraid to ask your group for references. Don't be afraid to ask what kind of background people come from. Things like that. I was amazed. We had a priest in our group for about a year and a half.
Yeah.
And he came out on a lot of the more negative cases. And for the most part, he was almost every time he came with us, he was wearing his collar and everything. No one ever questioned what denomination he was. Was he a priest? Was he a monk? Was he a reverend? What? Not one out of all the cases we dealt with. And that always surprised me because that would be one of the first questions that I personally would ask.
I don't know. I think that some people they're not worried about what denomination he is, just the fact that he is, has religious education behind him, that education behind him to do what he's doing. I don't think they really,
they probably also have such a high fear factor at that point. They're not thinking about that.
No.
All they think about is they see somebody in front of them with religious clothing on. Thank goodness they're here.
Right. Yeah.
So that's why it's really disturbing that there would be people out there representing themselves in that manner, violating the trust of some clients, not really having the background that they need to have to be doing what they're doing.
Right, and that's the conundrum, It's because, you can go on the internet and buy a shirt and collar. They don't ask for any ID or proof of ordination or anything like that. So anybody could be walking around dressed as a priest.
They have Halloween costumes that are priests.
Yeah.
Right. I'm not aware of any, but I'm sure we've encountered enough charlatans that in the way of groups that charge or guarantee to remove spirits, and they normally take the guise of being psychics or spiritualists and try to manipulate that. But I'm sure there's somewhere out there there's somebody wearing, you know, some clerical uniform that really is, you know, taking advantage of people as well. And people really need to ask questions. It's not necessarily a question of denomination, but ask someone, you know, where'd you go to seminary, where did you go, you know, to learn any of this? Have you ever done this before? Have you ever dealt with this kind of case? And ask for references. Is there anyone that we could talk to that you've helped before? Things like that. I think that would be very helpful when people realize, I know we're dealing with people who are afraid, but they need to realize they can make the situation a hundred times worse by picking the wrong people.
You know what, though? The reference thing could be posed to be quite a challenge for some of the legitimate people because of simply the work that they're doing. People may not want anybody to know.
Yeah, but if we've gone in and helped someone in their home and we call them and say, listen, we have another client that wants to hear from you and just to let them know that we're legitimate and we're out to help them, and yes, we, you know, did help them, and that's the end of it. They don't need to know addresses and everything else. Can we let them get in contact with you? I think if we've helped the client out, they're going to be more than willing to help that next person out.
Which brings
to get
a good point, that relationship that you develop,
correct,
the trust that you develop because you are legitimate and you have done
right
what you're there to do to the best of your ability.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, that alone to me is something that, to me, it's second nature just to assume that people would think like that, but they don't seem to do that. That's what I was thinking about today, when thinking about all the times that we wore out with... but he was a brother. He wasn't even, he was still going through the reordination process because he was being ordained in a different sect of Catholicism. So he had to go through the process again. So no one ever questioned that. He just, hey, you know, what church you belong to, anything. They just took it on sight that this guy was, you know, legitimate. And they met us. You know, there's not like a big learning or curve or meeting time where we've developed this bond. The bond happens over the length of time we're dealing with them.
Yeah, but some of that, I think, is because they found us. You know, it's that connection, the energetic connection or something, you know, the universal connection that they found us to get them help, and we responded, and so they just start to feel comfortable right away because somebody doesn't think we're nuts, and somebody cares enough to call us back and, you know, drive all this way, so they must not be, you know, mm-hmm, crazy people.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, I've always looked at, for the fact that we never put anything on our website that mentioned that we dealt with anything like that. I think now, I mean, the wording says we deal with problematic hauntings or mm-hmm difficult. I mean, that's as close as we've ever gotten, but yet we get so many of these cases. They are, none of them are really word of mouth. They all find us independently of each other. Right. Something is driving them to us, which leads you to the other question of, is it the good side or the bad side that's driving the cases to us? And I know that I've spoken with other groups that have been doing, you know, this for a long time, and they say they're surprised that they hear we actually handle cases like that because they've never gotten one questionnaire or one client ever that felt was a negative case whatsoever. And that just reinforces the fact that, you know, you're going to have some sort of divine intervention or something like that, kind of shuffling the cases to the right people. Or vice versa. You know, I guess you have to leave open that some people are going to be sent to the wrong place.
Well, yeah, for reasons, you know.
Well, to add into that, it's just like when we try to hand cases off that actually get bounced back to us. You know, that's another issue there.
You know, Kat's got a couple good points in the chat room as I'm monitoring that right now. One of the comments is like being a priest is a guarantee they know what they're doing. Absolutely not. We've dealt with, probably hundreds of priests. Some of them giving very, very lousy advice. Because they just either they don't believe, or they were never trained. Depending on the denomination and depending on where the background they were. I don't want to specifically pick on the Catholics, but it's a good overall way to look at things. For a period of time, the Catholic Church did train exorcists. Then they stopped for a period of time, really focusing on training them, because they saw it as, a relic from the medieval times that didn't really need to be dealt with anymore. And they were turning more to the world of science now and, mental illness and things like that. And then, John Paul II and Pope Benedict now, they were ones that kind of brought this back and are now the priests being retrained. But you have a gap now of time where, depending on how old the priest is and when they went to seminary, and also on what country they went to the seminary, because some foreign countries, they still kept on teaching that. We met a priest at one case from the Philippines who was very, very knowledgeable, not only in the darker stuff, but also in the aspect of psychic awareness and psychic abilities, which he seemed to have and openly talked about.
Well, that was the culture, too.
Which something would be frowned on by the Catholic Church in general, probably, but especially in the United States. So you never know who you're going to. Just having that collar, or having that, being a minister, priest, or whatever, doesn't mean they necessarily know what they're doing. That was kind of the gist of me saying, hey, ask questions. Did they ever do this before? Do they know what they're doing? Because you can't just say, even if it's a real priest, someone who's been a priest for 50 years, they may have never dealt with any of this, may have never been trained, and may not really believe that this stuff is really, really happens. They're not going to be much of help to you. So you kind of have to shop around. You have to know what to ask and look for the right people.
Yeah, how many times have we heard the client say that, the priest walked into the front door and said a blessing and turned around and left. They didn't go through the house. They didn't do, room by room. They just, there you go, and I'm out the door. I don't believe, so there I appeased you, or am I fearful and I just don't want to get into it and see what happens next?
It's almost like trying to find your own personal doctor. It's like when you go to the doctors,
Right, how many times we just heard that today? Michelle went to the doctor today, and she was telling me that her ex-husband had gone around to multiple doctors, and no one was able to figure out what was wrong with them. And then this doctor, really, he instantly kind of knew and figured out what this illness was that no one else could figure out. So you do have to shop around. Not everybody is, maybe as a tuned in, or maybe they're not meant to handle that case, or just the lack of knowledge or lack of, apathy, maybe. Some people, that's not something they want to get into. I've heard priests say that. That's not something they care to delve into. They're quite happy dealing with their, congregation and the church that they're at, and they don't really want to go any further. We've had priests hand people bottles of holy water and send them home to do it themselves. And that's just like a house blessing.
Yeah.
So it's, that's not just Catholic Church. I'm saying that's prevailing everywhere. And with every denomination, every world religion, you have to be careful. Because this is something that that happens throughout the spectrum of world religions. One of other cat's comments was, demonologist seems to mean exorcist or expert in demons to some folks. And that's the first one, I would say. That's the problem, where people think that demonologists are exorcists.
Yes.
Because they're not. The people, when they think of demonologists or people who've been around in the field long enough, I think of Ed Warren. He was a religious demonologist. He was sanctioned by the church. But he didn't do the exorcisms. They went out there to ascertain and gather enough evidence to see if an exorcism was warranted, and then the clergy would come in and do it. They were like the kind of the precursor, the detectives that would go out and find the evidence. And that I think some of the people who are wandering around calling himself demonologist, not only are also claiming to be experts, which there are, if there's no experts in ghost hunting, there's definitely no experts in demonology. Since, what exactly are we dealing with to begin with?
That's the media, too. The media does that, too. I mean, the media shows you, exorcists and demonologists, they put demonologists all in one thing, No matter what show you watch, movies, the reality shows, we're bringing in a demonologist and they start to do their, thing or put their collar on and do an exorcism or whatever the case may be. And they're not one and the same.
There's a huge question of what exactly are demons. And I don't think anyone can give an answer because I don't think anyone really knows. We don't know exactly what they are. There's theological theories. There's metaphysical theories. And to me, some of that really doesn't matter. What they're doing, and when you're dealing with something negative, what can we do to make it stop? Or what can we do to, alleviate the problem or get rid of it or whatever level we can attain to make the people, have a livable situation? That's what I'm shooting for. The whole background of what exactly its name is, where did it come from, and what it's, I'm not as interested in that. I think that's where people get caught up too much. Mm. Because of the movies.
Yeah.
We were watching The Right the other night. It was, tell me your name, tell me your name, tell me your name. And that is part of a ritual. But is it important to that, that religion and that the way that is performed? Yes, it's important to them. Yet other religions do exactly the same kind of removal or clearing of the spirit without asking its name. So it's obviously there's multiple ways of doing it.
And the media also leaves you believing that once it's done, it's over. You're good. It's like a scar. It'll go away, and you'll never have to be worried about it again. And people need to understand it's a beginning.
I remember John Bathis telling me, years ago, once the door is open, it remains open. It's never closed. That's why I kind of think whenever you've been really touched by something like this, if you've had a problem like I have, where I've had to go and have an exorcist performed, it's not like you're free and clear now for the rest of your life. I think of it as more of a, you've gotten treatment and your disease is in remission.
Yeah.
And it may remain in remission for a long period of time. It may remain in remission the rest of your life, but it may not. It may come out again every so often and, flare up and need to be treated again. And that's what people don't understand. Even the people who we try to help, they think it's, because in the movies, it's, one shot, drawn out, scene, everybody's good to go, it's happy. She's cured, or it doesn't work like that.
No, absolutely not.
Multiple attempts. That's kind of drives me crazy about the people who with the cleansings and clearings where they're going to go and clear a house. They do clear the house. They get rid of the negative energy. They get rid of the negative spirits. But how far do they go? Do they stand out in the yard and wait a few weeks and then come back in?
Right.
Well, yeah. You didn't really. Unless it's a perpetual thing where people keep up with it and constantly do it, it's not going to leave forever. If it has a reason, a stake in staying there or being invited in inadvertently or on purpose, it's going to keep coming back. And so it's going to need multiple attempts and multiple things done and over the long period of time, not just, it's not like a pill you take and it's over.
No, I just had an advertisement I saw on Facebook. Somebody was unhaunting houses. And so I asked them, what is unhaunting houses? What exactly is that? Could you explain that to me? And it turns out that the person is only doing cleansings in the house. That's all they're doing is cleansings. They're adding positive energy to the house. But that's the way they're advertising their whatever they're doing and whatever they're charging for, is they're unhaunting houses. And I said, maybe you need to learn exactly what a spirit is and what it can do and what you can't do before you start advertising that.
I mean, human spirits alone, just the free will aspect of it, What are you doing that you're forcing, you know, how are you forcibly removing that spirit? We had contact, you know, with working with, you know, another group where it was more lines of a spirit rescue, but the spirit was being forcibly removed from the premises against its will. Well, I don't, you know, studying the major religions, you know, no one believes that in that way. They all pretty much believe in that kind of free will, that any divine, you know, entity or angelic entity is not going to remove them permanently from a place and force them to go on to the next step. There's no angel that comes down and grabs you and, like, shoves you into the, you know, down the tunnel and, you know, kicks you till you get into the light.
No.
It doesn't work that way. But yet that's the kind of, you know, when you were listening to this going on, that's the kind of impression that was being given. And that, you know, all little things like that, I think, damage how everyone looks at the whole field altogether. And it's no wonder when, yeah, we have conversations like this about, you know, demonology and all demons and everything. No one really can answer any of the questions of, like, what is a demon, what isn't a demon, what's really going on, because the waters have been so mucked up and murky from people like the Unhaunter.
Yeah.
You know, and people like that have clouded everything up and make it difficult to really give an opinion without that opinion kind of echoing in someone's head and making us all look ridiculous.
Right, no. Yeah. And you can't, nobody should pay for an unhaunting. Please, don't anybody pay for it. A cleansing, having someone come in and cleanse your house, doing a cleansing, that's one thing, okay? And adding positive energy just to add positive energy, or, you know, to help move around energies is one thing. But for anybody to claim that they can move any spirit, unless the spirit says, please, help me, I want to go, but I need help, you can't move them.
I'm thinking how long I've been with SJGR. It's been almost like 14 or 15 years now with the group. And I can count on one hand still all the spirit rescues we've ever done, including the one this year.
Yeah. And that's the first one we've ever done.
That's a very low amount. And they were specific ones where the people, or the spirits, you know, people, spirit, same thing, really, they were specifically asking for assistance. They were not able to move on by themselves. They were aware that we were there. They were aware that we could potentially help them, and they were specifically asking for help.
Yeah.
In that case, you know, I think it might be your obligation to do that if you are capable of assisting them. Even if it's just telling them, hey, look around. Somewhere around you there might be a relative or a spirit that's there to help you, or an angel, or look a little bit closer beyond what you are now, and it'd be something. Even if that's all you're doing, you're getting a little guidance, or whether you're calling in angels specifically to help move the spirit along. Any assistance you can, I think it's kind of your obligation to do. You know, but I was thinking maybe we could turn this into another business, because if people, you know, there's a lot of people who've never experienced anything and always want to. So if there's like an Unhaunter, maybe we could become installers.
Yeah,
ghost installers.
We can put them back.
Where we go and we actually we'll put ghosts into people's houses.
Sounds like a TV.
We could advertise on eBay along with all the haunted objects.
Yeah.
Because you know those haunted objects sell.
Yeah,
yeah. They sell for like a ridiculous amount of money. So if people will buy an object that's someone that they've never met before on eBay claims it's haunted, then I think we could definitely, you know, have a service that we would, you know, install. You know, we'd give them a little catalog of, like, personality types. And,
yeah,
all right. You know, everything. You come through the catalog, you kind of pick, like, the different traits that you want in your spirit. We come up with the actual spirit itself, and we give you a little bio and a picture, kind of like what we did in the store.
Yeah, it's
when you walk, when you walk into the Ghost Center store, we have something that's kind of like to make fun of that kind of thing. We have, like a glass bell jar, and inside of it is another little jar with a ring and some dirt inside of there. and we have a little picture that's sitting, like a little sepia picture in an old antique frame sitting off to the side, just waiting for people to ask what's going on there. And
they do.
I think every time someone asks, they get a different story.
I come up with some good ones.
You know, and reality is the dirt came from the next door neighbor's yard, and we bought the frame of the jar came from, like, I think it was A.C. Moore or Michaels, and I printed the picture offline, and I mean, it was like the ring came from your house.
Yeah, it came out of the sewer when I cleaned the sewers out, yep.
I mean, it adds that whole little thing to it, but it kind of, in a way, it's our way of, like, making that little statement about the haunted objects. Mm-hmm. Because pretty much whenever I tell it, I usually let them off the hook and then say, no, it's just, yeah, we dug the dirt under there. It's like from next door, and it's a ring from Marty's house. So it's going to be, and then they look at me like, they're all disappointed because it wasn't really a haunted object, you know?
Next time they
ask. We can get bands and everything.
Yeah.
Probably we could probably actually turn that into some sort of TV show. That would be something that would be picked up, the ghost installers.
We can take the boxes and line them with LED lights, and you can pick what color you want, as opposed to the personality. You know, which I'll take the green one because it's a loving one, or I'll take a purple one. You know, and we can just open it up, and you can let the dry ice come out, and then the lights turn off, and the spirit's not there. Now you have a spirit in your house.
We could sell like little ghost houses for them to live in. I mean, that'd be great. Little ghost doors.
There you go.
Yeah, so they can come in and out, and they have to use the main door if they want to get out for a while. I mean, just think of all the product we could just put out with that. I think we're onto something here.
I think we should go for it.
Don't forget about the pets now.
Yeah.
I remember years ago that we actually had to throw somebody out of the group. This is going back probably about like 12 years. We won a case, and it was a case that... I found out years later that John Zappas had actually worked before. We knew that Ed and Lorraine had worked before, and we actually had called them, and Lorraine told us, good luck, give it a shot, but don't expect much, because the lady kind of likes what's there. She constantly wants help, but then she doesn't do anything to help you get rid of whatever's there. Mm. It was kind of a nastier spirit. He was, threatening her and, causing a lot of negativity in the house. But, when we left, one of our members called up afterwards, and he had hooked up with another person that was considered himself like a necromancer.
Oh, okay.
Like, summon spirits to get rid of other spirits, and mm-hmm. they offered the lady, for $500, they would guarantee to get rid of the spirit. But thankfully, this lady was smart enough to know that, okay, there's something, not right with that, and she called someone else in the group, and we confronted him, and he didn't deny it. Hmm. He was kind of like proud of that, something he had done before, and it was a little kind of business he had on the side. So, and that's going back 12 years ago. How many people are out there doing it regularly? There used to be a page online. It was like $1,200 for an exorcism.
Yeah, we had a customer call the store once. And she was up in the Connecticut area up that way. And she was flying someone in from California, paying all the expenses for this woman to come in and remove the spirit in her house.
Wow.
And cleanse the area for her. So
they're playing on fears.
They are. They absolutely are.
And it's going to be, it'll happen all the time. This is nothing that's going to stop. It's just the nature of the business, unfortunately, The field itself is
how many groups charge to go out to people's homes? Come on, give us $300, we'll come out, investigate, and tell you what's there.
And honestly, who go out for one reason only, to get evidence for themselves.
Yes.
They don't care about helping the client, they care about getting evidence mm-hmm. and putting it on their website. I mean, and I know we're getting off topic here, but it does basically ball up into the
all the same thing.
And, you do have these, quote, demonologists out there that are doing the same thing. They want evidence of demons. They want to get on camera,
yep.
Things flying across the room or whatever,
mm-hmm.
but they want it for themselves. They don't care about the client.
Which is, to me, that's even more of a danger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like I want to know what a shark bite feels like, but I'm not really going to go up my arm and then go swimming in the ocean waiting to find out. They're pretty much doing that. They're testing the state, but they're dragging along innocent victims with them because they're using the people that are seriously having problems and potentially having a real problem with a negative spirit. You know, they're using them as almost bait to get that rush or that little, you know, touch of the dark side for their own personal reasons. Mm-hmm. There are people out there that are claiming to be demonologists that are, you know, working for the other side. Mm-hmm. We've encountered, you know, a couple ourselves, and we unfortunately have some activists in our group that went off to that side too. They pulled Anakin Skywalker on us and converted to the dark side.
But that's the
it's almost like
it.
I feel like there needs to be like a public awareness kind of thing. That article I wrote was years and years ago, and it's still on the group, like on the local groups listing for the Shadowlands. But I never really looked to see how often that page is hit. But that might be something that maybe gets reworked, and we can incorporate it and put it in like and maybe other groups pick it up and use something similar to tweak it. So that, because any group out there who's legitimately doing this for good. You have no problem with letting people check out who they are.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah. That's why we put our hometowns and our first and last names on the pages. I still don't see a lot of groups doing that. But the reason why we do it is because I'm hoping that someone who's contacting us and having us come out and sit in their house for 3 hours in the dark, maybe at the very least, goes on and does like one of the little free online background checks on some of us to see, you know, who we are. You know, a little bit about us, maybe. You would hope.
Yeah, because they're letting us in their house at night.
Right.
In the dark.
I mean, there's something. How many of us have seen, I mean, every group out there, you've all seen it. You've seen money laying out. You've seen watches, jewelry laying out. You've had access to the entire house.
Yeah. There's pure trust.
Yeah, and they go sit in a room back in the back of their room, back of the house, and don't even bother to check on you. You just, you know, off you go.
I can't imagine that. I mean, we have people come in the store and investigate. Yeah, we're letting them run. There's nothing really of value anywhere up in the rooms they're checking. But I'm still kind of curious on what they're doing and we'll check in and pop in on them and stuff. Make sure they're okay. But I mean, also decide it's that kind of, you know, it's this is my place. I don't really know you that well. What do you know? Make sure you're not breaking anything, all right? You know, that always amazed me that people with that amount of trust. But there's.
Think about the client.
There are people that are going to take advantage of that trust. People need to be a little more careful, especially now that there's 5 million, you know, ghost hunting groups per state. When there used to be like 10 to 15 per state, you know. So you know, obviously, not everyone has the same amount of experience background. I know we're part of the TAP family. Yes, you know, so we're one of the groups that gets referred out when people contact them for help from through the show. Obviously, they're not going to be able to hit every state and the amount of volume of help, you know, requests to come in. But, you know, we're required through our affiliation with that to do background checks of all our trainees and all our members because they ran into a situation where someone, you know, was convicted of a felony before and it was their approval of this group and they're forwarding the case to them. They were, in a way, approving this group.
Right.
So now their acceptance of groups is a little more stricter. They do a little bit more background check, and we are required, and should we fail to do so, and they find out that we did have a member, but we never checked, and they did have a record, you know, we would lose our standing as one of the family groups. Which, I mean, it sounds extreme, and it sounds extreme at first, but when you really think about it, it probably should have been in place in the very beginning. And everybody should probably be doing that anyway. I mean, we ask on our application, have you ever been convicted of a crime?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had a couple people be truthful and say yes.
Yep.
And they don't get any further than that. But, you know,
thank you very much.
And we've had some people say yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have.
hard to prove.
How many people that we didn't think, you know, there's going to be dodge bullets and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, ever since the tax, you know, required that I start checking. And before, I would do the, you know, the old, like, that Google search or something like that. Now we do a more in-depth thing, you know, where it's a background, a criminal record check. But, and, you know, we've had enough police officers in the group over the years that were able to do checks on people, too, if we ever had a suspicion. But, yeah, we've just been lucky that we didn't run into anything like that. Or ever have an incident in a house where something was missing, or... We just had a case that was one of the group that was in there before us.
Yeah, but I think our training, our the way you train the trainees and, the fear of God you put in them as you're training
no
them.
Pun intended.
I think we weed out that. I don't really think our training, while it is, it's more intense and it's harder to get in our group.
I think
we weed out the people. We get the cream of the crop. I tell people that we probably turned down some of the best people that could be out in the field.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but we're looking for the people that fit. But we do our best to get the best that we can.
But how many
the best personality, the best traits, and everything. And I think that's why we're kind of, you know, where we are. Maybe that's why the cases get funneled to us, and that's why we've been around so long when we've seen other groups, you know, go by the wayside. I've got lost track of how many groups I've seen come and go. It's even hard for me to keep up with the local groups list on the Shadowlands. Because it's, I mean, every time we go and we run a link checker on it, probably about 30 to 40% come up as dead links. And we probably do that twice a year. So that means the turnover rate of groups coming and going, yeah, it's roughly about like 40 to 50% a year that they suddenly come and go. That's crazy, because some of these people have been in, you know, they've been just invited into people's houses without people really doing any, you know, question and answer. People need to be it's just like you need to be an informed consumer when you're shopping for, like, an auto mechanic or a contractor to build your house, any of that. You really need to do that when you're dealing with this kind of stuff, too. Because now you do have many, many choices. You're not just stuck with one or two local groups, that's all there is. There's a lot of choices you should really shop around. And that means you don't pick even with us, if you don't pick us, and you find someone else to help you and they can help you, hey, that's fine. That's the group you felt more comfortable with, if they're able to help you, that then go with them.
Yeah, but ask them, but, you know, what kind of training do you get? Something. Because most people, you know, what did it take to get into your group? $50.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been doing
right.
that?
Right, yeah, exactly.
I just started last week.
Never a good sign when it's like the questionnaire that you're filling out to get in the group is what kind of equipment do you own, you know, and then where to send your money to join, and then the next thing you know you're on investigations and you know with people you've never met before and you're part of the team. I mean, right there, some people want that. Just to be part of the team so much, that's what they'll look for. They jump at that opportunity, but it's not necessarily an opportunity that you want to jump at. It's not necessarily an opportunity at all. You know, it could actually work to backfire in your face by being in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah. With nobody that knows what they're doing, sure. No backup.
Yeah, because when I went up for my exorcism was caused by some friends or some ex-people from the group that kind of sent me little special presents that caused me to have some issues that I needed to go get taken care of up in Connecticut. But I had asked John because I felt a little awkward. You know, like, how many investigators do you get, to come up to get that need assistance or get something, you know, claimed that they're just, you know, little assistance like I needed. I mean, these are probably like 11 or 12 a year. That's much higher than I would assume it would be.
Yeah.
They're the ones that are smart enough or have smart enough people around them to go get them help.
To get the help, yeah.
And how many people don't? And we've seen that too, unfortunately, in our group, where people mm-hmm. have refused to get help and wander off and, you know, probably still having issues that they're unaware of that might be related to something they've encountered along the way. It's not always fun and games.
No, not at all.
There's a serious aspect to it. That's the show I want to see. I want to see more. I want to see a show about the serious aspect of this, on the end, some of the ramifications that, you know, why you need to be more careful.
Well, there was a couple of was it a haunting shows that John was in where they had investigators that had an issue and ended up going to him and being taken care of. Remember that?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, there was a couple of shows. That, you know, one of the ones I remember, I know they changed her name and everything. She was they went up and she went up by herself in the loft of the barn.
Yeah.
They encountered where there had been some synthetic ritual or whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, she quit the field altogether after that.
Yeah.
She never did it again because she was afraid for her children. They're perfect people to be advocates. She could be a perfect advocate to explain to people why. I mean, she can write one hell of a book explaining what you are really getting into when you decide you slap yourself. Just even what you're getting into by getting into the paranormal or the ghost hunting field. Mm-hmm. But to the people who want to slap the title demonologist or, you know, with exorcist onto their title and go out and look for that stuff, that story alone is enough to give you, you know, food for thought, at the very least.
Yeah. Well, the one investigator she was an investigator for a long time, and she ended up taking her son out to the cemetery to, you know, because he wanted to go and see what it was like, and he ended up coming back with issues and
that was the one with the dowsing rods, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. So even just what they thought was a fun night out, here, let me show you what a cemetery's like, can be dangerous. You know, you have to know what you're doing.
Yep.
On both ends.
You have to be aware, yeah.
And not only that, but, I mean, at least with us, it's not just a weekend. You know, we're in contact with each other all week long, you know, 7 days a week.
No, we're not.
Well, we try, you know. But it's just
we make a concerted effort to try.
Yes. But I mean, we all have people that we contact each day, you know, just to follow up with people, see how they're doing. I mean, it's not just a weekend. We're not just a weekend group.
No. Well, a lot of us are doing things during the week too, doing the prelims and stuff. So we're always in contact with the group somehow through emails or you know.
Plus, we keep an eye out before the case to make sure that we're. Mm-hmm. In a good frame of mind before the case, not just during or after,
right.
Which is also very important.
Yep.
So I'm going to have to remember to post the, I'm going to give the, I won't, it's too long of a link, I think, to give out over for the podcast or for anyone listening, but what I'll do is I'll post it on the South Jersey Ghost Research Facebook page and the Paranormal Straight Talk Facebook page, if anyone is interested in reading that article. And if you want to take it and use it and update it maybe, or, you know, and even send it back to us with some updates. Any kind of constructive ideas where it could be something that groups can use to, so people know what to look for when they're looking for help. Right. You don't, I mean, I know, even say you have a leak in your roof, you don't just go to whatever the first roofer is in the book. You know, and call them, hire them. You normally ask around, you look for someone, you know, that has dealt with them before, or people who are licensed in your area. I mean, you're looking for something more than just the first one or the one with the best-looking website or something like that.
Unless you're panicked.
Yeah.
If you're in a panic mode.
Then you're calling four or five different groups and having them all come out at once.
Yeah, exactly. Or, you know, the first one that comes, and that's probably even on both ends, the investigators or the client, they're the ones of most concern.
Oh, yeah.
The ones that aren't thinking.
Mm-hmm.
That need to get out there right away to help the client, or that the client needs whoever will come out to help them out.
Well, the one that has, you know, the group, well, we just had a group on Saturday, and it's still here, and it's still happening, and we're going to have a group this Saturday, and they're still, it's still here, and it's still happening, now we need you to come out. Well, whoa. First of all, those groups need to explain to you that it's not a one-time deal. And we can't help you just by walking in your house and saying, poof, it's gone.
Let's all take a step back, take a deep breath, look at what's happening, and move through the emotions. But no, I think those are the ones that are the most vulnerable at this point. Especially
sure. Well, they're feeding all that energy into it, besides the fact that they're having this issue, and they're letting anybody and everybody through their house trying to help them. And who knows what they're doing.
Yep, and what else is coming in at that point.
Right.
The escalation starts to happen, and it's a snowball effect.
Yeah, who's going out because it's a heavy case, and we can provoke and see what happens, and maybe I'll get scratched. Yay.
Yay.
You know.
And then the homeowner's getting hit now, and it just gets ridiculous.
Yeah.
But see, that's, in those situations, you're hoping that you're dealing with smart enough groups or experienced enough groups where, at least with one of our recent cases, we were able to talk with the other group and have a dialogue where we were both on the same page of trying to help the people. Mm-hmm. And it's some groups, unfortunately, still goes back to that territorial thing. And they're like, you're going to steal a case from us and things like that. And that shouldn't be anyone's main concern when someone's having issues. It should be the welfare of the people. And we've bowed out of cases because of that. Well, I've seen other groups do the same thing. Because you don't want to overlap. You don't want to make things worse.
Right.
Or something that's going to contradict what someone else just did. Unless you're all communicating, you can't have multiple groups really doing it.
Right.
On their own, because you're making a mess of things at that point.
But then the client's like, well, it didn't fix it. It's still happening. Okay, what did they do? Did they do something to try and fix it? Did they just investigate? What did they do? I don't know what they did. They came in my house. I went out. I don't know what to tell you next. You know?
Exactly. You need all your information. You need to be well prepared.
Yeah, give us the name so we can contact the other group and talk to them, or give them the okay to talk to us so that we can help together, you know, that kind of thing. But
here's a little tip. Any group that's demanding that you leave your house while they're doing what they need to do, unless it's further down the road and it's some sort of, you're dealing with maybe clergy or something like, or a house blessing or something really down the line. But I'm talking initially where they want to do their investigation and check out, and they want you to leave, you might want to find another group.
Yeah.
I would be suspicious of, because it's your house, you're always there when the activity happens anyway. So it really makes no sense for you to be not in the house.
No, it changes the energy.
The activity, you are the dynamic that's mm-hmm. part of the house and part of the activity. So you not being there takes past the dynamic of what's normal in the house away. So if there's no logical reason why they shouldn't want you in the house, I would question that right away. And I would not feel comfortable with having a group, in my house, that requested me to leave and come back.
No, definitely not. In fact, I get uncomfortable when people say, "Oh, well, we're going to go out. We're going to go." The one they went out to the garage because they have like a den or something in the garage, mm-hmm. but it was separate from the house. And we're going to go out there. And I was like, "Oh, okay. Well, at least they're that close that we need them." But I've had people say, "Well, we're going to head out to the movies." No. No, tonight.
Yeah, how many times do we stop people really from going out to dinner or doing that?
Yeah.
And now someone's got to stay.
Definitely.
And that, again, that comes from just, to me, it's common sense, but I think it comes from experience, too. Just, we do have, a group of people that have been clients before. We kind of understand it. Bill, you were our client. Yeah, before you joined, I have been a client of some other group before, and currently with the Ghost Hunter store, we had another group come out to assist us there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of us that have been on the receiving end, so we kind of understand what it's like, and that gives us a unique perspective that you can only explain to other people. They can't really, until you've stood in their shoes, they can't really understand. What's happening in someone else's house is completely different than what's happening in your house.
Right.
Yeah.
Especially when you don't know everything you may know now about everything happening. And when it's been more of a mystery in the unknown, it's no matter even if it's the smallest little thing, it's still terrifying. But I think that gives a very good perspective. I think some people who have had, that's one of the things really we kind of do look for when we recruit people for our group, are people that have had experiences before, because they know where the people are coming from when they're explaining how scared they are or how upset they are or uneasy they are, because you can't fix that. You have to have been in those shoes before. Mm-hmm. That makes you a better investigator because you're sensitive to the people's plight.
And you do understand that they are looking to you.
Yeah, you're the, we're the expert.
Yeah.
You know, it's,
so that's a responsibility. And you have to make sure that you're up for that responsibility.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. You have to make sure you walk out of the house and they're more calm than when you walked in, no matter what's going on in their house.
Mm-hmm.
You have to make sure they're more calm as you're walking out the door.
Well, it's a little mantra for all my classes that I teach, and we get to leave at the end of the night, the people have to stay.
Yeah.
But whatever we've done there, we'll, at least until we come back, or if anyone else comes back, they're stuck with whatever we've done, whatever we've not done. However we leave it, they're spending the night there.
Mm-hmm.
So we gotta, you got to think of that as your own house. Are you comfortable walking out the door or having someone walk out the door and leaving the house in that condition? That, you know, we were leaving right now. And, you know, just from other cases and cleanup cases we've done behind other groups, that's still not really sunk in with a lot of people, I think. They don't understand what it's like to deal with private houses. So that could be a whole other show right there, just the whole concept of what's different between dealing with a private house and going to public and historic. Yeah,
that's like a really great point, though. A really great point, because it is two completely, and I'm telling you, completely black and white separate investigations.
Mm-hmm.
Because on one, you are there just to have fun, get evidence, or whatever you're doing.
Or even if you're helping the historic building out, you're there to collect evidence for them.
Yeah, for
to show. Yes.
But the other end of it, really, that's not your primary deal, is to collect the evidence for yourself. It's to help the client.
Yeah.
And you have to really make that distinction.
Yeah, and if you walk out of there nothing because you sat with the client and talked to him all night long, that's the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
All right. Well, I think we're running down. We're running out of time. We're down to our last couple minutes here. I wanted to thank Marty for her patience and getting everything set up remotely, because I know it's tough doing everything over the phone and through our cameras, trying to get all the boards set up.